It's time now for the Sports Objective Podcast. No talking heads, just guys who love sports. Here's Dave Richmond.
Welcome into the Sports Objective Podcast. Our Pirate playback is the Pirates fall to the Houston Cougars, the Cougs, 42-20. And we've got our usual suspects. I'll start off with the birthday boy. Happy belated birthday. As we're reporting now the day after your birthday, Kyle from LaGrange Barber. What's up, man?
Going on, Dave. Appreciate it.
And I know you're 26 years strong, so many
Okay, sure. We'll go with that.
And also a man that's in his 20s as well, Bubba Rosenbaum. What's up, man?
Not much. Just driving back. I'm in Burlington on my way back to China Grove.
And we have a couple big guests coming up today. Obviously, we're going to talk to Scott Weatherby, a great Pirate, as he was under Terry Collins as the Associate Athletic Director for Tickets and Marketing. We'll be talking to him. He's the Athletic Director now for Eastern Michigan, and we'll be talking to him. And we also have a great Pirate football player, Jeff Carr, we'll be talking to, and a lot of Pirates still to players to get out for the Nostalgia Party. A guy that helped us out with the Nostalgia Party is with us now, and we have a special co-host, don't we, Bubba?
Yeah, we do. He's running back from the Skip Holtz era. He's on the 2008 Conference USA Championship team, and now he's a high school coach in the Raleigh area at Millbrook High School, which is actually Pete Herring's alma mater. And we have with us Brandon Simmons.
Brandon, welcome in, man. Glad to have you this morning.
Glad to be here. I do appreciate it, as usual.
Absolutely, guys. Tough loss as the Pirates lose 42-20. Now 2-4 overall, 0-3. In the American Athletic Conference in that Eastern Division, it looks like the chances of playing in that championship game in December are not going to happen as we thought. Tough day at the office, I thought. Definitely looked like in the first half, you know, we could have had maybe more chances and certainly a lot of three and outs. The defense played, I thought, I know the score may not indicate it, 42-20, but I thought they played really well. I want to go around the horn and get y'all's thoughts first on a disappointing loss, and then obviously the defense. Brandon, we'll let you go first because you're our guest.
Okay. My observations were pretty much like this. Last week, again, when we played against Temple, that was very uncharacteristic of our defensive showing. And as expected, Coach Black went back to the drawing board, and he tightened up the bolts, which is what we saw yesterday. Like you guys stated, the defense, my opinion, all things considered, played at a very high level. What people must understand is that the Houston Cougars offense is very explosive. Correct me if I'm wrong, but their offensive output has been maybe 50 points a game, something along that lines. So to give our offense an opportunity to be competitive, again, accredited to the defensive staff. But I felt that they were flying around. True, it might appear that it's been lopsided with the 42 score, but all things considered, I was very impressed with the defensive showing yesterday.
What do you think, Bubba? What do you think about the defense and overall for the game?
Just the game in general. I mean, coming into the ball game, like Brandon just mentioned, it's well documented the explosive offense with De'Aaron King and all of Houston's skill guys. They were averaging 50 points and nearly 600 yards coming in and had scored at least 41 in every game. And even though they did get 42 yesterday, of course, they had the scoop and score that allowed them to do so. And then they put up those two quick drives, and you're sitting there thinking, oh, boy. But then give Coach Blackwell and defensive staff credit. Them and the guys settled in and really played excellent football for a big part of the game, and we were still only down 21-6 fairly late in the third quarter before that scoop and score made it 28-6. And then offensively, really the script or the way things unfolded, it was the exact reverse of what you needed to see happen. We came out 2-3 and out in the third possession. You finally got a little something going in the flea flicker on 1st and 10, I think it was, and about the plus 40. And then through the pick, we had Taj Deans open on a crossing route. but then we threw it to Trayvon and double or triple coverage, and then our next possession we had to punt. So, and then our fifth drive of the game, and there midway through the second quarter, we finally got something going. We put together about a 14 or 15 play drive, but had to kick a 32-yard field goal, which was another one of our keys to the game. We couldn't be kicking short field goals. We had to get touchdowns against the offense of Houston's caliber. So, and pushed some things up. I mean, I thought the defense did a good job of keeping us in it, but we're just so one-dimensional offensively, and I think Houston's defensive front, their speed and quickness gave us issues on both sides of the ball, but particularly on defense, we couldn't block them in the running game, and I think the longest game we had in the run game outside of Holt Naylor's 19-yard run was a 4-yard gain, so that really puts things into perspective there.
Yeah, Kyle, I know that this, you know, we last year, if we were not doing the podcast, but if we were, we would be talking about how bad the defense was, how bad the defense. But this year, it seems like we thought that what's been a mystery for me this year is when I knew that David Blackwell was, you know, like it looked like things were going to be better for the defense, I felt optimistic as far as the being competitive. And then when we saw the early on in September until last week, you know, you had to be feeling good that we actually had a shot to win 6 games, and now it's looking more like the reality setting in that we may have, what, 3 games, 4 games at the most for our ceiling for the year?
We're staring 3-9 at the pace again. I mean, that's what it is. I think that's Scotty Montgomery's ceiling is 3-9. As far as my thoughts on the game, then I'll echo the thoughts of everybody else. I thought the defense played extremely well. Scored is not indicative to the way they played. The offense didn't give them anything. You know, you're down 21-6 late in the third. If your offense can go put something on the board and make it, you know, 21-13,
right
now all of a sudden that defense can be fired up and be flying around even more if you're just going to start pressing. Mm-hmm. You know, the defense feeds off the offense and vice versa.
Mm-hmm.
So, but when you can't get anything going on offense, and you're 6 games into the season.
Mm-hmm.
And you're rotating 3 quarterbacks. I mean, mm-hmm. Who in the world rotates 3 quarterbacks in the third game of the season? You need to be settled on your quarterback by that point.
Mm-hmm.
And as far as the defense goes, man, Blackwell's doing a great job. Coaching matters. David Blackwell's coming here and took arguably the worst unit in America last year,
mm-hmm.
and turned it around and made it more than competitive. And, you know, just knowing what to do with personnel. You look what he did with Nate Harvey. You got a kid who's been, you know, fifth string running back or whatever he was, sitting on the bench, and you know, Blackwell comes in and recognizes his abilities and puts him at D end and look at him.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you just goes to show if you watch our offense play, and I know I'm rambling, you can sit there and see that we don't know how to use personnel. Particularly on that side of the ball. I think on defense we do, but on the opposite side of the ball, we don't know how to use our personnel properly. It's sad.
Coach Simmons, I know you, Brandon, I know you coach high school, and
mm-hmm.
coaching definitely does matter. The one thing that has been just really boiling for me is I was telling, I was at practice this past week, and, you know, the guys look so good in practice, and I know there's a
mm-hmm.
big difference between practice and game time. But for me, it comes down to player development. I want to get your thoughts on that. And then it comes down to experience at the quarterback. I mean, these guys, you know, we were talking about 3 quarterbacks, but it starts with player development. The other thing is experience. We really threw 3 guys. We've thrown 3 guys to the Wolves so far this year, I feel like, with little or no experience.
I agree wholeheartedly. And to add on to that, you know, when it comes to player development, that's critical, you know. Again, players are as good as the schemes that they're in, and vice versa. Coaches, and again, from a coach, I mean, I've been quite vocal about it, but players win games, coaches lose games. And when it comes to this whole quarterback situation, and I've been quite vocal about it, again, I understand that all 3 guys are very talented. Okay, I mean, all 3 guys do some good things in their own right. But the biggest issue that I see in the offense is that the offensive personnel guys do not know who to follow. And again, that's because instead of focusing on one quarterback, they're constantly having to figure out all three quarterbacks. Against ODU, okay, everyone else was celebrating when we were rotating three quarterbacks in the first drive. Well, I hate to be a party pooper, but I was not one of them. I felt that we needed to make a decision on one guy and live with it. Okay, I mean, if it's Kingsley, so be it. If it's Reed, so be it. If it's Ehlers, so be it. But make one decision and live with it. And when it comes to experience, like you just said, you know, what people fail to realize is that all three guys are still young. Okay, True Reed has been in the system. True Kingsley has been in the system. But none of them have been a consistent starter against Division I talent,
right?
including Ehlers. So with that being said, you know, we just have to keep that thing in mind when it comes to this offense. But you cannot win football games if you can't run the football. And again, just looking at some numbers, the rushing average last night was 1.3. Okay, we rushed for 41 yards last night. That's unacceptable.
How many attempts did we have?
We had 31 attempts.
41 attempts. Okay, I'm shocked we had that many attempts, to be honest.
Yep. we were averaging 1.3 per rush. We rushed the ball for 31 times for 41 yards. Houston, on the other hand, again, a credit to the defense, but they rushed the ball 43 times for 157 yards. So they were averaging 3.7 per touch. Again, you can't win football games if you can't run the football. Keep pressure off the quarterbacks.
And it's been consistent since Montgomery's been here. We haven't been able to run the ball, and we've rotated quarterbacks. That's been the MO since he's been here. Can't run the ball, rotate quarterbacks. I mean, you go back to 16, we played Minshew and Nelson. You go back last year, we played Minshew and Sirk.
Mm-hmm.
And this year is Herring and Betty and Aaron and Ehlers. And it's been a quarterback rotation ever since he's been here, and the inability to run the ball. Well, I mean, you keep banging your head up against the wall. To me, that goes back again. Coaching. I mean, if you're doing the same thing for 3 years and it keeps the same results and you keep having to rotate quarterback and you keep not being able to run the ball, you've changed your O-line coach. To me, it comes down to your scheme. It comes down to your scheme and not how you use your personnel.
You know, the interesting thing, Kyle, to echo what you were saying, if you look at it, if you go all the way back to Ruff's last year, so in other words, after since Shane Carton has left in 2014,
yeah,
if you combine the last year of Ruff and the 3 years of Montgomery, to this point we have started eight, count them, eight quarterbacks. Let that sink in. Let that marinate a little bit. Eight quarterbacks over the last, what's that, four seasons. It's just unbelievable.
Insane. It is.
Eight quarterbacks. I mean, you would think that would be, what, a decade's worth? Or half a decade's worth, or at least, or, I mean, those 6-8 years worth, maybe more. And instead, it's just been a few years. So when you look at it, the quarterback situation has been the elephant in the room since 2015. And, you know, going back to be fair to Ruff, Brandon, you took a disastrous year, potentially, with Ben Kirk going down, what was it, a week or so before the season?
2 weeks.
And you already had lost Lincoln Riley to Oklahoma. So those two big pieces of the offense gone. And then you go 5-7 with basically Blake Kemp and James Summers were good, but they were, I don't think they were Division I quarterbacks. James was more the emergency quarterback that we had to rely on because Ben Kirk was down. And Kemp, we almost beat Florida down.
Yeah, we did.
I mean, we were driving and then he fumbles that ball. I mean,
Kemp was a good system quarterback. It's just his he wasn't a Division I quarterback. His athleticism and his arm was limited, but he knew that system.
But we have a situation now. Let's talk about the next topic. I want to get your guys' thoughts on this because this is something that is inevitable. It looks like it's going to happen with Mo's comments last night. You're going to have a true freshman. Take the emotion out who it is and the fact he's from Greenville and that I like him personally and think a lot of his dad. you've got a tr- if you were on the outsider thinking about this, you have a true freshman coming in on Saturday night playing on ESPN2 against potentially, we don't know this yet when we're recording this, looks like it'll be the number seven team in the country with UCF. Is that a recipe for disaster?
Well, I mean, it's a recipe for disaster no matter who starts. Have you seen us play? I mean,
yes,
UCF, UCF is going to boat race us. I mean, but it's I get what you're saying in terms of Holton hurting his confidence.
Right.
It could be a disaster there. His first start is going to be against UCF. You know, that's not where you'd like to have a kid have his first start is against a top 10 football team. So I'm more worried about it getting into Holton's head. Holton's a very confident kid right now.
Right.
And he does have a lot of fire, and I do think that'll get the boys fired up. Unless Shane Carden's coming back, I don't think, you know, maybe we can get David Garrard some eligibility. I don't think we would have had much of a chance to beat UCF anyway. But in terms of just for Holton personally, no, this is not the best way to break him in as a starter.
I mean, wouldn't you think that you would, if you're going to start Holton, and I know that they're trying really hard to give Reed a chance, I understand all that, but wouldn't you start him, Brandon, against Old Dominion versus UCF? I mean, I know it's hindsight and all that, and things play out the way they play out, but it just seems like with starting him against UCF, if that's the case, maybe that they start Reed. I feel like they're going to start Holton this week.
Well, so my opinion on the whole situation is simple and plain, okay? If you're going to bite, and again, Coach Holtz will say this all the time, if you're going to bite, you're going to bite as a pup, okay? So with that being said, here's my thing, here's my argument. If Holton is the guy to take over this offense, then you throw him in the fire. Throw him in the fire. Matter of fact, correct me if I'm wrong, but that is how Shane Carden got his start. Against South Carolina. Absolutely. And all we want to see is a quarterback who is willing to compete on the highest level. Now, I will say this much as well. Okay, I will say this much as well. He is young, so we must be willing to live with the mistakes of a young quarterback. We must be willing to do that. We can't pull him just because he throws the interception,
right,
or the ball is stripped out. You know, we can't do that. Okay, now you play the guy who gives you the best opportunity to win. But like I stated before, if he is the guy with the hot hand and the troops are rallying behind him, let the chains go. Let him run the offense. And I'm not just saying, hey, just a read option here or there. No, I'm not saying that. I'm saying, hey, run the offense. Okay? Five wide, like you would as if Reed was in. Five wide. Let him throw the ball all over the yard. Let him run some read option. Let him run some you know, some trickeration type plays, some RPO type, you know, plays like that. True, it's a whole lot being thrown at him, but it is what it is. If he is our guy, then you give him the full playbook and live with it.
RPO could really be effective if he can run it at this point.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You know, and Brandon, the way I look at it, and guys, Bub, I want to get your take on this. What at this point, what do we have to lose? Brandon's right. You know, you put him in there. If you do what they've been doing, just doing the read option, and you just have a few plays designed for him, that's a terrible way. You need to really open up the playbook. What do you have to lose? If you're playing UCF, you need to throw everything at them that you have. If not, it's no point in playing the game.
Well, they did last night in the fourth quarter against Houston. I think they had some earlier plan than they were hopeful in, but they did open up the playbook last night with him in the fourth quarter. So that's what you got to do. You're not gonna beat anybody just running certain read options.
No one, correct.
So
no one.
He's got to be able to go out there and sling the ball. And he has that ability. And Montgomery is trying to save his job. I guess he is. We may not have anybody here that can fire him because I'm an AD. That's what we'll get into later. But I think Montgomery's trying to save his job, and so Holton showed in the fourth quarter last night that he can throw the ball, and so he'll get the nod against UCS. There's no doubt in my mind. Reed Man, look, the way they're trying to run the ball and what would be effective running the ball out of the so-called offense would be running some zone read with a passing game. And Reed Herring is just not a running player. He's just I don't know. He's a small guy. He's got some speed, but he's just so small, and he does not like contact. And, I mean, and that's fine. I think Reed would have been quite successful in an air raid offense. But anyway.
Yeah, the biggest thing right now we're looking ahead is the future. And so we're at the halfway point, 2-4. It's now the, the intermission, if you will. And then we're going to have the second half of the season coming up this week with UCF. Brandon, I know you've played in big-time games, conference championships and the like. This is a huge game, huge atmosphere, nighttime atmosphere for the Pirates coming up. And, you know, when it's almost maybe a Hollywood script. We could argue all day long of how they lose the game. Do you give the Pirates any kind of what kind of chances do you give the Pirates to win on next Saturday night?
Well, and like you said, as being on both sides of the coin, you know, I've been on the side where we were favored. I've been on the side where, you know, we were not given an opportunity. For example, I vividly remember before we went and played against Boise State in the Hawaii Bowl, we looked at ESPN, and we were only given a 2% chance of winning that football game, and we got it done. But obviously, situations are a little bit different. But I say that to say this, okay? The game is not won before you play it. And to be honest with you, if we don't stand a chance of winning at all whatsoever, then what's the point of even showing up? So, you know, my echo to the players is simple and plain: control the controllables. You know, eliminate the mistakes, execute, do your job, make no excuses. So to answer your question directly, I believe that there is a chance that we could win. Now, obviously, the chips are stacked against us. We dug ourselves into a hole, but it's a great opportunity. It's opportunity in chaos. It's opportunity in chaos. And if this offense can generate enough points, okay, which is a tall task, but if they can generate some form of momentum and score points, touchdowns, not field goals, and if the defense can return back to their championship ways, you never know. You never know.
It'll be a great one.
If we somehow hold the first start, this is somehow we were to beat a top 10 UCF.
Absolutely.
He'd be a legend overnight.
He would be a legend. And he has the tools. He has the tools and the intangibles to be that guy. I've seen it in high school. We've all seen it in high school. But if he can carry that momentum into big-time Division I football and get it done on prime time, then, hey, next week we'll be having a different conversation.
Fun question, guys. Bubba, chime in. If we beat UCF, even though they're UCF, we beat them a ton of times, and because they're doing what they're doing right now, and they're a top-10 team, the way we've been playing, if we beat UCF, do the students storm the field and tear down the goalposts?
Yes.
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 I'd say definitely with where things are.
My God, you know what? If look at it this way.
We will push over buses, too.
But, guys, something I wanted to add, and we're talking about UCF, probably going to be ranked 7th when they come in next weekend. Just taking a look back at it, we were talking about it last night off the air. Of course, West Virginia, the team that Brandon Simmons played against in 2008, they came in ranked 8th, and, of course, flying high with Pat White and Noel Devine, et cetera. And we put a 24-3 beat down on those guys. Really wasn't even that close. Defense totally shut them down. And then taking a look back even farther, of course, in 1999, the game was played in Raleigh, but then you had Miami number 9. And then going back to 1987, a visit from the U then at Dowdy, I guess at that time, just Ficklin Stadium, it was 41-3 Miami that day, and the Hurricanes were ranked 3rd. So I wasn't able to research everything, and that wasn't contained in the fat book, but I think maybe number three Miami, maybe that's the highest ranked team to ever play a road game at ECU.
Will this be, Bubba, got another question for you, Mr. Stuntman. You know, the NCAA, a lot of people don't realize this, officially recognized UCF national championship. So will this technically be the first defending national champion to come to Greenville?
That's a good point. I hadn't thought about
that. Yeah, that's a good question. I'm not 100% on that.
And why has ESPN been burying that, that the NCAA recognized them as co-national champions in August? The ESPN has buried that. Brandon, did you even know that the NCAA ended up recognizing UCF's claim?
I did not. And good for them. I did not.
They did in August.
That's an interesting thing. But if we're going to have three, that's the one thing when you look at the Power Six conversation, you can make a strong argument for. That's another time for a podcast, another day, if you will. But with UCF, if they keep winning, you know, if they beat us and then run the table, they might find themselves in the playoff. If they go undefeated this year.
If you go undefeated two straight seasons and they don't get a chance at the playoff, I mean, I think it's time to sue. I think it's time for the American and the Mountain West and the other so-called group of fives to sue.
Because
then you've just proven that you're never going to get a chance. And it's become a monopoly then. It's become a monopoly of five conferences. And it's not I'm not a lawyer. There's just certain words for that. I don't know if any of you guys can help me out with it, but there definitely would be grounds for a lawsuit.
Oh, most definitely. I think it's one now. And you know,
I do too.
With the situation we've got going on with that, there's a lot of teams, Brandon, like East Carolina, that I look at us right now the same way with the conference. You can make an argument that we're right on the bubble. We should be there. We've got to improve, obviously, our facilities. Another time for another topic for another day, so they say. We've got a lot of great things going for us. Despite all the adversity at East Carolina right now, we've got a lot of great things. And our conference, in the same way, we've got a lot of great schools, a few in the top 25. So it's not like we're just a pipe dream or this is a marketing campaign for the office of the American. We have a legitimate argument.
Absolutely, and I'll tell anyone this. You know, when it comes to the American Conference, it is a very good, very athletic, very strong football conference. And when you watch our brand of football, you will be entertained. You know, you have high-powered offenses, but you also have championship-rated defenses. And again, I can proudly say that ECU defense is mentioned in that conversation. For better or for worse, you know, but yeah, absolutely. You know, whoever takes the championship in our conference deserves an opportunity to compete in the playoffs. It's only right. I'll tell anyone, last year, UCF, they were as good as anyone in the playoffs last year. If you look at them play and look at them right now, I mean, they're phenomenal at what they do. They're innovative. Their kids believe in what their coaches ask them to do. And like ECU, they're willing to line up anywhere at any time. I mean, who's next? Who wants some? You know, so I love watching our brand of football in the American League, to be honest.
And
I was just going to piggyback off what Brandon said very quickly. As far as the quality of the football in the American, all right, guys, what right now you have UCF. It's obviously going to be ranked seventh, as we've already mentioned. You had USF ranked. You also have Cincinnati and the tremendous job Luke Fickell has done there, turning that program around. They're undefeated.
And it's 2 years, Bubba.
Right, and his second year. And then you also have Houston that's 5-1 now, knocking on the door of the top 25. So that would give us four ranked teams. And then you have Temple. Temple has turned things around since their slow start. And they've won four out of their last five. And then you also have Memphis, who nearly took down UCF yesterday. They led 30-13, and then UCF pulled out the 31-30 victory.
Absolutely. Hey, guys, I wanted to, before we get deep into the conversation, Bubba, I know we had a guy that was big in the, as first as an independent, and then we went to Conference USA. I'm talking about J. Jeff Carr. I know you know him personally. Talk about Jeff Carr and one of my all-time favorite linebackers at East Carolina.
Yeah, Jeff Carr, that's what he, of course, played during the Steve Logan era. Very instrumental on that 9-3 team that we had in 1999, beat Miami. Jeff's nickname was Wood, and he said that was something that was given to him at practice. He said it felt like a 2x4 hit you after Jeff Carr had laid a lick on you. And I certainly remember him delivering several huge blows on opposing quarterbacks and running backs. I remember the game in Charlotte against West Virginia, several big plays he had in that one. And then also I remember him knocking Spencer Romine, Duke's quarterback, from the game the following week in Greenville in a 27-9 Pirate victory.
Yeah, let's talk to Jeff. It was great to talk him back in the summer for our nostalgia party, one of my all-time favorite Pirates. And let's go to that interview now. Well, our next player up for the Pirate Football Nostalgia Party, man, oh, man, I still reference to him when it comes to linebacker play after all these years, and that's Jeff Carr. Jeff, thanks, man, for coming on. It means a lot.
Yeah, you're welcome, man. I appreciate you having me on.
I remember way back when I was actually first in radio with Henry Hinton, and I learned about you, and then I learned from other players your nickname was Wood. Can you tell everybody where you got that nickname?
Yeah, it's I got that from a lot of the offensive linemen. I think it was Big Ed and Shane and who else? There were several other guys in that group, but those guys would call me Wood because I would bring the wood in practice is what they'd say, and gave a lot of headaches and a lot of concussions on my point.
Yeah, you were, when I refer to the linebacker player of today, you were one of the ones I always mentioned because I remember that very much. They said it felt like you were getting hit by a piece of wood or different parts of that. So we wanted to have you on tonight. I tell you what, you know, when you look at your career, you had a lot of great times. And I wanted to, what memories do you have of being a Pirate and being played for the fans in Dowdy-Ficklin?
Oh, man, I continue to tell people today that was – by far the greatest highlight of my life, just being down in that area. And I've always told the people that would ask about going to Greenville and how the people were. And I mean, the answer is always the same. I mean, that's the salt of the earth people there, and they give you the shirt off their back. The people there are just the best that I've ever been around, and made a lot of great lasting memories and friendships that still continue today. It's just great people in that area. And, love that town, love the college, love the city, and everything it represents.
Well, we definitely want you to come back with the Southside Project. It's going to be tremendous next year when we have that done in 2019. Are there games that stand out for you or certain plays that stand out for you that are like a highlight reel? If they had that Jeff Carr highlight reel, or would there be certain plays or certain games that are on there?
Certain games, I guess you look at the Miami game, by far was one of the best games that we were able to be a part of. The Duke game, personally, I had that circled on the calendar from the time I was a freshman. They had recruited me, and then they had changed coaches, and that was one of the places that I was considering going to, and then they came back and told me that I was not on their radar anymore and that I was not going to be recruited. So I kind of took a personal vendetta with that one. And
oh, I didn't know that.
Wow. Yeah, and they went through three quarterbacks in that game and got down to their fourth quarterback. And I think we put two of them out. Well, one was a broken jaw, maybe, and one was a broken collarbone. And but anyway, it wasn't anything that was a personal vendetta on them, but it was just that game was circled in my mind, in my memory, and I was going to give everything I had known at that point and make sure I sold out. But for that one, and then NC State, very similar situation. Kind of went through something very close to the same deal there. And I always circled NC State just because that's a big rivalry for East Carolina as well. But that's a big NC State or a big in-state rival for everybody. And if you've ever been recruited by people in the state, then at some point you either didn't get recruited by them anymore or there was something that changed in there that just kind of gave you that personal vendetta. And I always took that to heart. And I think anytime you can find another reason to play the game, which I didn't really need, but if I could find one, I was going to make sure I made the best of it.
Well, you were one of the players during then. I think the term, and not me, but you guys were mean and dirty, and I don't mean that in a bad way. I mean that in a good way. And there's a certain grit that you guys had, and that 96 team was the first team I had as a broadcaster. I got a chance, I was blessed and covered you guys, and I can't believe a team that went 8-3, for example. I've talked about you guys are one of those special teams that will always stand out for many reasons after I graduated from East Carolina covering the team. And for a team to go 8-3 and not make a bowl game, that still hurts today, and I wasn't even on the team, so I can't imagine what you guys with Coach Logan and the coaches went through.
Yeah, I mean, I can still I remember exactly those words spoken in the locker room one day, and it was hurtful. It was tough, but I mean, anytime that you go through that in a year, I just hate that for something like that for the seniors to go down. But I mean, I played with some of the best players, I believe, truly, and I mean, those guys, Big Norris McCleary, Rod Coleman, and I mean, you look at Kevin Monroe, and I mean, I can go on and on and on. Chris Satterfield and
Travis.
Antoine Yelverton, yeah, I mean, Travis Darden. I mean, it's just we had so many good guys and great players that were on those teams that, I mean, they got overlooked by a lot of different people. But when you got a coach like Coach Connors and Coach Logan and then Coach Huxtable and Coach Jeff, I mean, all those guys, they did a great job of turning us into and making the best of what we had. I mean, we never truly had the best talent out there, but we always played in a game where we believed that we weren't the fastest in the first quarter, but we were in the fourth quarter. And anytime you can continue that philosophy, you can beat any team out there as long as you hold on long enough and as long as you get them into the fourth quarter. And a part of that was the tenacity of the mental training. And the mental training is, man, you're gonna beat on them every single play. And when it comes to helping people up, I never believed in that. Everybody looked around like, oh, you need to do sportsmanship. Well, all right, sportsmanship's great when you meet before and after the game, but during the game, I mean, that's, to me, you put them down on the ground for a reason. I didn't put you down there to pick you back up. I put you down there to leave you there. And you always play the game with a little bit of a chip on your shoulder and play every game like it's your last. And I truly believe you'll get the most out of sports and the most out of life itself.
You're firing me up, man. I wish I had the ability and the not the age is definitely not on my side. I tell you, you had, I don't want to say bigger and better things when you're off to bigger and better things, but I've just been impressed. There's this phenomenon with you, and we're going to talk, obviously, Big Ed, but there's a phenomenon that started with you guys way back when, and I wanted you to talk about your NASCAR career and what you're up to today, but let's talk about NASCAR, too, because I'm a huge fan of the sport of NASCAR, and how did it come about? I want you to tell the story. How did it come about with you guys to go from the transition of having a major college career like y'all did, and all of a sudden now you're in a huge sport like NASCAR?
Yeah, Ed's been in it longer than I have, actually, and he left, I believe, in his, he was a junior, I think, on the field, but I think he was graduating at that time or something along those lines. I don't know his full story, but he'd been in a little bit longer, and I think he got started out with Everham Racing and some different avenues there. But for me, I kind of came in with, my brother-in-law was a pit coach with Dale Earnhardt Incorporated, and he had always been on me and asked me if I'd be interested in doing it. And I said, yeah, sure, after I finished football, obviously. So football was great. It was just that time to make a change, and I felt ready, and NASCAR seemed like the next legitimate way to go for me to still be able to enjoy that team personality and still be able to compete. And I mean, I've always got that competitive blood in my system that I don't think I'll ever be able to get rid of, and I can see my kids have inherited it as well, but it's a matter of that part of your life never really goes away, and you want to try to find something to kind of fulfill that, and that was my avenue with that, and it's been a great career. It's been an enjoyable opportunity for me. We spoke earlier, it's for me, it's that time to kind of transition because you can't be an athlete forever, and a lot of those hits that I remembered in college that you just brought up, I remember every morning when I get out of bed and I touch the ground in the morning, and everything still hurts, but that's a whole other story in itself.
I want to ask you about when I was growing up, and you're not too far behind me, I remember the guys, it was like these guys off the street were the pit crews, and now it's like top tier athletes, and they're coming to East Carolina, they're coming to college football, and they're, if they can make the difference of a man a second or 10 seconds or pit stop is the difference between winning and losing a race a lot of times. So how does it go about with what kind of workouts, and I'm sure Coach Connors helped you in that, what kind of workouts do you do to get ready for a NASCAR season?
Well, with NASCAR, it's actually the longest season of any sport because you go from February and all the way through the end of November, and so you're looking at only a couple months that you have off. And for us, it's more of a – for football, you really train hard to put the most – I want to say effort, but, I mean, the best physical body that you can put on the field for just a few months there, and that's all it lasts. But for us, it's a long season. It's grueling. There's a lot of times to where you're waking up in the morning on a Sunday morning. So we'd fly to the track and get up out of bed at 2:30 or 3:30 in the morning and be at an airport at 4:30. And then you had to drive maybe an hour to the airport. And once you get to the airport, well, now you got to fly to a racetrack for 2 to 3 hours and in an airplane. Then you got another drive for an hour to get to the racetrack itself. And once you get there, the track opens at 7:30 a.m. And then at that point, you got to work from 7:30 a.m. to 3 in the afternoon, setting everything up, making sure everything's right, meeting with sponsors, doing the things that you got to do to make sure all your stuff's set up for the race. Well, then by the time you get ready to race, you've been awake since 2:30 a.m. and now you're being asked to do the most important job all day long for the next 4 hours and be at the tip-top shape of your game. Well, at that point, the biggest fatigue and failure that you're going to meet is going to be the mental failure. So you got to be on sharp of your game and on top of your game mentally more than you really do physically, and to be able to stay competitive in all areas.
I know that you had a nice little run. I think you were telling me before we did the interview, 18 years, and now you're actually your financial, you want to say, advisor with that financial advisor. Where are you doing that now? Are you back home in the western part of the state of North Carolina?
Yeah, I'm actually living in a little town called Troutman, North Carolina, and working as a financial advisor for a firm that's called Thrivent Financial, and it's a Christian-based organization, and it's a great opportunity. I'm truly enjoying every minute of it. There's a lot of give back to what I do, and Thrivent's been actually on the list as most ethical companies to do business with, and we've been on that list for the last 8 years running, and they've actually been voted on that list as the only financial company on that particular list. So that's a big achievement in itself, and for me, that was what really brought me to the company, knowing that I've got a big part of me loves to give back and to help and do a lot of things within the community, and through this job, it allows us to do a lot of things with churches and Christian organizations and other places that really pushed more the sales side and pushed more to try to do things that can be, it's definitely beneficial to the bottom line and to making money. It's just, at the end of the day, I just want to be known as somebody that's been able to do things for others that they couldn't do for themselves, or I felt like I've actually made a contribution to something that's going to make them have a better life. So I think a little bit of all those things kind of mixed together is really what brought me to Thrivent Financial, and truly enjoy what I do. It's really great.
I'm really happy for you. It's always, I've said this for other players, you know, you guys were there for a few years and you see them and you see the players and then you wonder what happened to Jeff Carr, what happened to Travis Darden, what happened to Rod Coleman, what happened to all these guys that you saw 20 years ago, 10 years ago, you know, even a few years ago. You don't know what happened to the great. So that's another reason why we wanted to do this event, is to give back to the players who gave us a lot of great memories and a lot of great wins over ACC schools and teams that were not ACC schools yet, like Miami and West Virginia. There's a whole bunch of great victories that Pirate players have given over the years, and a lot of great memories. So I have one final question for you. Any of the kids, can we get scholarships for the Pirates for your kids? Because they have great lineage there for their dad. What do you think?
Yeah, their mom, Misty, she played basketball there as well. So she was, I always tell everybody that was our first date, and she took me out and beat me in a game of horse pretty handedly. So I've had to fix the first dinner. So They do have some genetics behind them, and I would love for them to go to ECU above all other places. But again, that's one of those things everybody knows, that it's hard to control your kids and telling them what they need to be eating, much less telling them what school they need to be going to. So one day I pray that they'll go to the right place and make the best decisions possible.
That's right. What's certainly best for them. Jeff, I tell you what, I could talk to you for hours. I appreciate you very much. It's great talking to you. It's been a long, long time, back in the days with Coach Logan and Mike Hamrick and Coach Connors, a lot of those guys back in the day. It was it's great to hear your voice, and definitely hopefully we can get the player more of you guys down here at some point. But certainly I love to keep in contact with you and through the season, and we're hoping that we can have a turn this thing around, right the ship, and from 2-3-9 seasons, hopefully we can get that competitive edge and get back to the more wins in the win column.
Oh, absolutely. I think we would all love that, and I look forward to listening to the show as well to hear what some of the other guys are doing. I've not been able to stay in touch like I'd like to over the years, and it's definitely a lot of good folks that we were all playing with and playing together.
A lot of band of brothers. Jeff, thank you so much, and good luck to you. And, again, we'll stay in touch, and we're hoping we'll get maybe 10. It would be nice to get six wins, but it would be great to have double digits or a lot way up there like you guys had.
I'm looking forward to it. I hope they're putting the work in right now. I know Connors is pushing them, and I pray that they're doing the right thing on off the field, because that's going to transfer to the field. So looking forward to it. Good season.
It was great to catch up with Jeff Carr and Brandon. Another great appreciate you coming on. And to let everybody know, we don't want to let the cat out of the bag, so to speak, just yet. But we're going to have another live podcasting event we're going to be announcing very soon. And hopefully Brandon will tell you about that when we get done with the podcast. And hopefully you can come join us. We'd love to have you certainly very, very soon. Let's get back. Here's another conversation I want to bring up, because I know Kyle is just like, his blood pressure is up right now, so we're going to make it even higher. something we've been talking to the last couple weeks is the AD situation. We want to get Brandon and you involved in it, too. You know, Kyle, I'm going to let you take the lead on this, because I know you're extremely passionate about not having an AD right now.
Yeah, it is beyond ridiculous. It's 7 months ago, we ran Jeff Hopper out of town, and thank God we did. And you know, he went running with his tail between his legs, wouldn't mind his paycheck. And Susan Staten, our so-called chancellor, has yet to make a decision 7 months later on an AD. Now, 7 months later, guys, this is one of the most pivotal times in East Carolina history.
Mm-hmm.
We're in the American Athletic Conference, and this knucklehead, Cecil Staten, hasn't hired an athletic director. He's got Dave Hart. You know, I respect Dave Hart. Dave Hart did a lot of good things in his year. We've got Dave Hart. Look, Dave Hart don't want to be AD. Dave Hart's been there, done that. He's retired. He don't want the job. The problem is Cecil doesn't want to go through the search process of hiring an AD. Cecil doesn't value athletics. He originally, he really loved it when Dave Hart got here, because Dave Hart was running screen for him and smoke. When Dave Hart was here, everybody was like, oh, you know, this is great. Nobody would put pressure on Staten. That's over with, guys. The tone has changed. The media has started to change their tone. The fans are starting to change their tone. They're seeing between it now. They're seeing that Hart's not going to take the job, and they're seeing it's just a waste of time, and it's all a shield to protect Cecil Staten. One of two things needs to happen. Dave Hart either needs to take the job, or he needs to step aside, go, Cecil, as your advisor, I'm advising you to hire an AD.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, if Cecil doesn't have the ability or want to or the care to form a search committee and hire an AD, or even hire a search committee to hire an AD, just let Dave Hart decide who the next AD is going to be. Or hell, just take the lead from Kyle, from LaGrange, and Dave Richmond, and Bubba Rosenbaum. Hire Scott Weatherby or Jeff Barber. It's not that hard. I mean, this is ridiculous. It's absurd. It's offensive is what it is. It is offensive to me that you don't think Cecil Staten, that you don't think our athletic department is important enough to have a true leader, to have an athletic director. We're sitting here trying to compete against UCF. That we're sitting here trying to compete against, you know, USF and Temple and et cetera in this conference, along with recruiting against ACC schools in this area, and we don't have a freaking athletic director. That is as small time as you can get. I mean, Jiminy Christmas, FCS Division II, Division III schools, you have to have an athletic director.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, this is absurd. And it goes back to just Cecil Staton, as the chancellor, does not care about athletics. He doesn't care. We have the, and thank you, you know, and I'm going to put it out there, man. Kieran Shanahan, Henry Hinton, it's y'all's fault that Cecil Staton is our chancellor. He is the worst possible fit for this university. He needs to go. But in the meantime, Cecil, hire an AD. Dave Hart, if you really love ECU and you don't want to take the job, then be a man, step up and tell Cecil, I don't want this job. I'm not going to take this job. You need to hire a full-time AD and help him make the decision on who that man should be. And I think I said everything needs to be said.
Well, I wanted to go ahead and get to a guy that is a great pirate who is here under Terry Holland, who is the marketing director and obviously the for tickets, the associate athletic director for marketing and tickets under Terry Holland. And, of course, I'm talking about Scott Weatherby, who spent about a decade in Greenville. We had a chance to talk to him right before the season started a couple months ago. Let's talk to him. Let's go to the interview with Scott Weatherby right now. Here on the Sports Objective Podcast, and we have a very special guest with us for the Director of Athletics at Eastern Michigan University, the Eagles. Scott Weatherby joins us. Scott, thank you so much for spending time with us.
Oh, thanks for having me on. I appreciate the reaching out.
Absolutely. We want to talk. I know you have East Carolina ties. We'll talk about that later on, some memories from Greenville. But we wanted to talk about your new gig. Very happy for you for getting the Director of Athletics now for about a year at Eastern Michigan. And I wanted to talk, how are things now as the boss, the Director of Athletics?
Yeah, it's been exciting. I've actually had a challenging first year. It's not anything that I would wish upon a new athletic director. I, you know, unfortunately had to make tough budget decisions here, and you know, but that's part of the job. You kind of walking in as the leader, you've got to come in and make those tough decisions, but you're doing it for the betterment of all of the department and all of our student athletes. And so we had to eliminate four sports, and but with that, it has made us a lot healthier and stronger, and we've got a lot of really good things going on. I'm actually looking out my window right now and watching them bulldoze our football team building to put up a new team building. So we're real excited. It's the first building that we have built for athletics in 25 years, and so I'm excited that I was able to kind of get that launched and go out and fundraise and have the opportunity to build a new $20 million team performance center for all of our student athletes.
Well, that was one of my questions about facilities in that particular case and fundraising. I wanted to ask you, now that you've had the job at Eastern Michigan for a year, what is your vision, your future? I know you had the likes in East Carolina to work for Terry Holland, but are there other facilities, things that you want to do now that you're athletic director at Eastern Michigan?
Yeah, and, you know, it's what's cool is every stop that you make, you know, at East Carolina and Mississippi State and now coming to Eastern, a big piece of what we, you know, did in my time at East Carolina and even at Mississippi State was we had to go out and get new facilities and stay up on our recruiting and providing the best resources we can for our student athletes and so they can have this great experience. We can bring in top-notch, top talent. And so this is the first step here at Eastern is to – we have different phases in our championship building plan, and this is phase one, a $20 million facility that will house a brand-new sports medicine for all of our student-athletes, a new weight room for all of our student-athletes, and then new football locker rooms and football offices and team rooms. And that's phase one. Phase two is we have two more – we up here in Michigan, we need indoor facilities. So we have a bubble right now that's multi-use, but it has no air conditioning and really no heat. So we're looking at doing two new indoors where we'll have a new indoor football and a new indoor track. Our track program here is extremely successful. We've had an Olympian in every Olympics since 1960. And
wow.
So we take a lot of pride in our track program. And so we're excited about a couple of new indoors. We need to redo our track. We actually are one of the few schools in the country that still has a track around their football field. And that's something that we want to remove that and give them their own place and get a little better feel to our football stadium. So those are things that we have planned. And my hope is actually within the next 2 years, we'll have that all actually done. And our whole West Campus, where our athletics sits, will look, be transformed and look completely different, which is what we did at East Carolina when we, you know, changed the soccer and gave them their facility and softball and did the Olympic sports building and track and field. Very similar to that, where we're going to just change that look. And then eventually I'm going to work on going to the press box, similar to what East Carolina is doing right now. And we did the same thing at Mississippi State. While I was there, we spent more than $200 million on projects, and I was a part of the new baseball stadium they're building right now. It's a $60 million facility that's just going to be incredible. And those are the things that you have to do. And so you got to go out and fundraise, and you got to go out and get with donors and spend. You know, I try to spend at least half of my time trying to work with donors and work with our facilities to make sure we're getting everything we can for our student athletes and staying at the top of, for here, the Mid-American Conference in our facilities.
I wanted to ask you, I know that you're originally from Michigan, the Kalamazoo area. How does it feel to be closer to home? I know you got to be happy to be, there's no place like home.
Yeah, it's real interesting because for my family, home is Greenville. My wife and I got married, and in our first year of marriage, we moved to Greenville, and then both of our kids were born there and spent 10 years there. So home to our family is, my kids are Southerners. My wife likes the South. So home for our family is Greenville. And so when people ask us where you're from, my kids kind of say, well, I'm from North Carolina. But coming home for me, as far as coming back to Michigan, was big. I had not been back to the state in about 20 years. But my dad still lives in Kalamazoo. He would just always come visit us in the South instead of us coming up north. And then my sister still lives in Kalamazoo as well. So I've seen my dad more in this first year and spent a lot of time with him. And he's getting older, so it's been great to be able to see him and him be around the kids. So that part of it has been really good for our family and stuff. And we enjoy the Ann Arbor, Ypsilanti area. A lot of people don't know Ypsilanti, where Eastern Michigan is only 7 miles from the University of Michigan. So I can make one turn and I can be at the Big House. And so there's a lot of Michigan fans around. And where I live, I live around a lot of Michigan people and stuff. So, but it's a great area and great schools, and the kids have had a great first year, and they went sledding for the first time ever and built a snowman for the first time ever. So they enjoyed it. Now, how much longer they'll enjoy winters, we're not sure. but it's been a good first year for them as well.
I wanted to ask you about one of my broadcast partners, Kyle Loves, your football coach, and Chris Creighton.
Yeah,
wanted you to talk a little bit about him, and I know in the MAC he's been so successful as director of athletics. How do you keep a great guy like Chris Creighton?
Yeah, Kyle is spot on. Chris Creighton is one of the best men that I've ever been around, and I'm not talking about a football coach. I mean, I'm talking about as a person, and he is just a great guy that is very motivational. If you can remember when Skip Holtz was at East Carolina, and after you got done hearing Skip, you were ready to run through a wall, and he got you motivated. Chris is the exact same way. When he speaks, you listen, and he has a lot of really good things to say. He's so structured in his program, and our kids, he just goes and gets good kids. So this year, he had a 2.99 GPA. From his football program. That's incredible. I mean, I've been in I've been in college athletics 22 years, and I've never had a football program be that good. And his APR is strong. We have very little disciplinary issues. You know, he went to a bowl game in 2016 for the first time in 30 years. I mean, we just have not been able to win here, and he has found the right formula and the right mix. Last year we went 5-7, but we lost six games in a row by 17 total points, and we had the ball. We had the ball every game at the end to win. You know, we lost. We had a Hail Mary against Kentucky. If we pulled it down, we win that game. So we beat Rutgers on the road, our first Power 5 win. So he's breaking down barriers and doing a great job. And all I do is love on him. You know, him and I, you know, I'm trying to hug him the whole time so he won't leave, you know. And if we have a great year this year, I know people are going to come after him. He was very successful at Wabash. He was very successful at Drake. His only losing seasons have been here, but he's actually been able to get it to where, you know, we're starting to see the wins and really transition and kind of get us out of the cellar. And so I'm excited about our football program, and I just love being around Chris. He is he's a man of his faith, which I really appreciate, and he wants these kids that come in to grow to be men that can go and be successful and be good husbands and fathers and be successful in the workforce. And so I really appreciate him and how he handles his football program.
I want to ask you, I love facilities and certainly fields. I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to that. Can you talk about the gray turf that you have there at Eastern Michigan?
Yeah, and it's neat because it's people are either love it or hate it here. So I get a number of people that say, will you please change the turf? And then I get a number of people saying, I love the turf. So one of the things I enjoy about having gray turf is the fact that any time I see top 10 fields in college football, East Carolina is always up there because we have the sweet, you know, logo at midfield. And then our gray field is always mentioned. Boise is always mentioned. So I like the fact that at least we're being mentioned in those things, and it keeps us in the forefront. But the story behind the gray field is when Chris Creighton got here, he made the comment that, you know, we just work harder. You know, this is going to be like a factory where we just roll up our sleeves and no white collars, just all blue collar, you know, we'll play anybody, anywhere. We'll go play them on a basketball court with broken glass. We don't care. And so when he said that, they said, well, let's make this gray turf. So it's supposed to be black top, like a black top with broken glass. That's the whole premise behind the gray field. So that's what they came up with, and I like it. I'm good with it. It's a talking point for us. It's unique. Recruits like to see it. It's kind of hip and cool to them, and we're one of the few schools in the country that has just a little something different that we can talk about.
I wanted to talk about your time at East Carolina, the memories. One of my favorite people as well besides yourself is Terry Holland, and I wanted to get your take on him. And can you give us kind of an inside scoop what it was like to work in the Ward Sports building with him and all the great folks in Greenville?
Yeah, so just talking like that, you gave me goosebumps. I literally am sitting here with goosebumps. Terry, I think the world of Terry, and, you know, things I learned from him is that you hire good people and you let them do their job. Terry was somebody that he was there and he supported whatever I did, but he wasn't always there with his thumb over the top of you. He lets you do your job and he lets you have ideas. And, you know, I had a lot of say in our budget. I had a lot of say in ticket prices. I had a lot of say in how we were going to handle themes and do things for games. And he, you know, you have to, of course, build that trust with somebody. But he ended up, you know, over time became more like a father figure to a lot of us. Because you could go to him. He was very open door, very transparent. You know, he would sit down with the media and say, look, I'll answer your questions. And I think that's real important. And so I've learned that. I try to, you know, wear my heart on my sleeve. He's very similar to that. I remember when he hired Ruffin. I mean, it was very emotional for him, so much so that he couldn't even introduce him. It meant a lot to him to have Ruffin come in and coach, and the passion that Ruffin brought, you know, being a former ECU guy. And so I just enjoyed being around him and realized that you don't have to stand over every area, but have a pulse of what's going on. And then he was really good with people. And, you know, he knew who we had to take care of and who we didn't. But he was also a face. You know, you got to be out in the community. You got to take interviews, good or bad. And you just have to be very transparent with people and let them know what's happening. You know, when I got to East Carolina, you know, we were John Thompson's first year. You know, we struggled first 2 years. And then Terry came on board and, you know what, he looked at us and said, look, I just don't ever see it getting any better. And not very often do you let go of somebody after 2 years. But he saw that it was not going to improve and said, let's make a change. And he went ahead and pulled the trigger. And I appreciate the fact that it was for the betterment of all of our student athletes, even though they might not have seen it at the time. And it was a great decision. And then, you know, we really got things rolling basically from 05 on. We took baby steps along the way, and then finally it took off in 2008 and 9. And obviously that coincided with winning as well. But I think we had a good game plan on fan experience and building excitement and getting students involved.
I wanted to ask you about one of the things that sticks out in my mind when you're talking about tickets. You were responsible for probably one of the highest times ever of season tickets of 24,000, a little over that. And for folks that don't know, Dowdy Ficklin Stadium seats 50,000. So roughly about half of the stadium was sold in season tickets. How does any school, including East Carolina, get to that high watermark?
Well, I think our game plan, so when I took over the marketing department in 2006, the game plan was always each game had to be a special event. You know, each game, I wanted to treat it like a wedding. You know, everybody remembers everybody's wedding, you know, and so you want that experience that if a kid or a family or somebody comes to an East Carolina football game, they'll remember that experience. And how do you do that? Well, you have to entertain them, win or lose. They don't, you know, the memories aren't necessarily on the field unless it's a, you know, win at the end or an overtime, and you remember that a lot of times. But most of the time, it's what happened in the game, the experience. So that's where we started to focus on our entrance and bringing the entrance and getting exciting, making it so people want to be in their seats. When one of the most frustrating parts when I first got there was people wouldn't be in their seats. They'd be tailgating, and the team's running out to a half-empty stadium. And so we talked about that, and how can we make it so we have this cool get in early and be a part of it. So when the team runs out, they've got a full stadium or pretty full stadium, and they're amped up and ready to go, and that just helps them. So we focused on that, and then one of my primary focus was on our students. I felt like our students would create the atmosphere. So if we can get student involvement, get buy-in from our students, then that would help all of the others, which is a lot of people don't think that way because it's like, well, students are free. The money's not in the students, but the money is in the students. And we're taking that concept here at Eastern as well. In our attendance, we increased, I think, 12% last year, the highest attendance we've had in 10 years in football, and then we set an all-time record in women's basketball and stuff. You've got to focus on our students, and so we focused on the Student Pirate Club, and, you know, they went from maybe 1,200 members to 4,000 members, and then all of a sudden we got to 7, and then we got to 8, and then we got to 10 in 08, and that's really when it took off. So, you know, we'd have 24,000 season ticket holders, but we also had 10,000 students on top of that. I mean, so we're over 30,000 at a facility that holds 50, and you have to hold 5,000 for visiting fans. So we were in a really, really good place. And then to fill the rest of it, we got creative with, okay, what corporations or what theme is going to happen. So family weekend is a big one, and then homecoming separate, and the military appreciation, and so you go down the line. Here we're doing a made in the mitten day, so kind of pure Michigan is a big theme around here. So we're going to actually have kind of like a farmer's market and have a bunch of people that have arts and crafts from Michigan and different businesses from Michigan come to our game and be a part of the atmosphere. And so you've got to get creative and think outside the box to do that. And we slowly built it. You know, it didn't happen overnight, but we knew that we were building up. And then obviously we put together a heck of a schedule that everybody was excited about. And I don't, you know, I think our teams got better because our crowds were better. It goes hand in hand. You know, you've got to have that. And then it helps with recruiting when you can bring a recruit to a football game in 2007 and have, you know, then it was 40,000 because we hadn't expanded yet. But to see a full stadium and, you know, one of the few non-Power 5 places that could fill a stadium, that helps recruiting. And so it was a great time. You know, we focused on the fan experience. We focused on our students. And we focused on themes to figure out how to fill those extra seats each game. And it's a philosophy I carried in Mississippi State, and we filled it up, and we expanded, and we filled that up. And now I'm taking that same philosophy here and really focusing on, you know, I added, you know, how we did Purple Smoke when we came out at Dowdy-Ficklin. I have green smoke here. We bust through a wall, and we have green smoke and fireworks, and they hadn't had fireworks in 10 years. People have been in awe. You know, I mean, those are just the little things that make a big difference, and the kids remember it and they want to come back.
Well, Scott, you've made a big difference in East Carolina, Mississippi State, all the places you've been, and I'm happy for you that you well deserve to get the job at Eastern Michigan back closer to home, and you've been gracious with your time. I know that you're busy in the athletic director's chair, so thank you so much for talking to us and spending some time with us today.
David, I really appreciate it, and certainly miss all my friends back in Greenville, and hopefully sometime I can get back down and visit everybody.
What a great pirate, guys. That's our segment, A Great Pirate, and Scott Weatherby up in Eastern Michigan, a guy that is, I think if we offered it to him, he would take the job. I want to go around. I know, Brandon, you were actually there as a player. Do you remember any interactions with Scott Weatherby at all?
I do. He was class personified, you know, like Terry Holland. You know, he was very instrumental with his job. And to be honest with you, if he is offered the opportunity to accept the job, I mean, me personally, I'm okay with that. I mean, and again, Terry Holland, the thing about it is that Terry Holland is from Clinton, North Carolina. So, and you know the old saying, you know how that goes, the apple doesn't fall too far from the tree. So so I'm perfectly okay with that decision. Again, leadership is important. And the organization is only as strong as the leadership. And athletics is a big deal at ECU. It just is. And we need someone who is willing to not only take over that job, but also lead us into a different atmosphere, you know. But I'm perfectly okay with that if he was offered the opportunity. I'm sure he'll do a good job.
Yeah, I want to piggyback what you're saying, you know, with Kyle, Bubba, all of us have been saying – leadership matters. Coaching
Absolutely.
Matters. If you don't think coaching doesn't matter, look at David Blackwell, what he's done. If you don't think leadership and coaching hey, Brandon, I'm going to throw one at you right now. If you don't think coaching and leadership matters, look at the Carolina Hurricanes, ladies and gentlemen.
Woo-hoo!
One of my favorite teams in Raleigh won again last night on the road. Mm-hmm. They got another big one, but they've won every single game. How about that? They've gone outside looking in with the playoffs for 9 straight seasons. Here we are. Imagine that. If you don't make a coaching change, ladies and gentlemen, you could be like the Hurricanes, where they were over half the teams in NHL make the playoffs.
Mm-hmm.
They didn't even make the playoffs. You get Rod Brendamore in there, who won the
mm-hmm.
Stanley Cup as a captain. And, I mean, if you don't think coaching matters, you can just go to Raleigh and look how good they're doing right now.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I don't know a damn thing about hockey, but I'll tell you what. I know Rod Brendamore won the Stanley Cup at the Carolina Hurricanes. So he believes they're winners. In his mindset, the Hurricanes are winners and should be winners, and that's his standard. And so that's the standard those boys are playing to for him because that's his standard. He said, when I was here and I was head coach, we were winning the Stanley Cup. And since that's the standard he has, that's the standard those guys are trying to attain.
Absolutely. And to add on to what you just said, to piggyback off what you just said, the buzzword that you use is mind state. And if the leader of the organization, again, the CEO, has that fixed in their brains that excellence is the only option, and he's been there, done that. Then the players have to respect it, and players are going to play for their coach. And I was fortunate enough to go to the Hurricanes game last Sunday. And when I tell you the atmosphere was electric, oh, my goodness, it was electric. The brand of hockey that we're playing, it's fun. It's fun to watch, you know. The crowd involvement, that's fun as well. The overall engagement. The excitement level is here, and I'm excited I'm excited for the future of Hurricane hockey. I really am.
Bubba, did you want to jump in on the hockey talk?
I'm kind of like you, Kyle. I don't know a whole lot about it. That's the reason I was staying quiet. But
but everyone loves a winner, though.
Not a whole lot I can contribute. I will say this, though. Dave's mentioned it multiple times. I've had other close friends as well and just rave over going to Carolina Hurricanes games back in the days where they were contending and winning the Stanley Cup. I would love to be in the game and see what it's all about, that atmosphere that Brandon just referenced.
It's phenomenal, Brandon, man. Let's put him on the spot right now, Brandon. Let's all go, and I'll get some friends, and we'll take Kyle and Bubba, and we're going to go to a game. I'll take my son and daughter. My wife doesn't really care anything about hockey. She loves other sports, but hockey is not one of them. But let's go to a game, because I'm telling you, you can see the atmosphere. All you have to do, right, Brandon, you go to a game and they'll see what I'm talking about.
Absolutely. And again, so to be honest with you, my good buddy, Matt, he had an extra ticket and I wasn't doing anything. And he asked me if I was interested in going. And my first initial reaction was to say, not so much, because you guys know, like I know, when it comes to sporting events, it's very exhausting. It's very fatiguing, finding parking, walking around. Well, that was my first Hurricane game, actually, you know, attending, and I was blown away. Now, I will recommend this. If you happen to go, or when we happen to go, make sure that you wear at least a fleece,
yes,
you know, a hoodie or a fleece, which I had to learn the hard way, but I'll cover up your limbs and you'll be okay. You know, the food is good. The energy is there. But, yeah, it's definitely a must-see.
Yeah, well, Moody, I can testify for this. Now, I'll say this, and believe me, I hate to put over anything involved in NC State. PNC Arena, if you go there for concerts,
mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I've gotten cheesesteaks and things there. God almighty, can we get, you know, some of their food vendors? Not so much Dowdy Ficklin. Dowdy Ficklin is, you know, we got Villa Verde and a few other places
mm-hmm.
that are really good, Chick-fil-A. Can we get a couple of those food vendors over at Mid-East Coliseum?
Absolutely.
Yeah. You know what?
Yeah, as far as Mid-East Coliseum goes, guys, we have to open more concession stands than one or two.
No, no kidding.
So hopefully that will be changing. I'm tired of sitting in the upper arena and having to go to the lower arena to get a slice of pizza.
Mm-hmm. Let me guarantee you, I will guarantee you this right now, that one of the reasons why they've done that is there's been nobody there, so they're paying people for just to stand there for hours. So what it comes down to now is you have Joe Dooley, and we'll have and by the way, I'm glad you brought that up, Bubba. I want to say that I held to my commitment. I told you guys I would, and I promised Joe Dooley back in June that I would. I got season tickets, so you guys are going to have to go with me to the basketball game.
Can't wait.
I'm telling you, with Joe, you were speaking of a winner. Joe Dooley's a winner.
That put together is incredible.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
Dave. That's what we're 3.5 weeks from tip off. November 6th against Delaware State in Minji's.
It's going to be the atmosphere is going to be great because of Dooley, what he brings to the table.
Mm-hmm.
And I can tell you that those athletes, that we have athletes on that team, and they're going to play to the best of their ability. And we may not win. Obviously, I don't expect us to go undefeated or anything crazy or some kind of Hollywood script. But I can tell you right now, we will have a winning season. We will have a winning season with Joe Dooley. Mark that down. I said it. And if I don't, if it's wrong, I will come on this podcast and I will admit I'm wrong. And how wrong I was in March, if I'm wrong.
To me, it's not even that important that we have a winning season this year. The staff Joe Dooley put together, if he can keep them together, it's inevitable we will be successful here.
Absolutely.
I mean, you that staff we have right now, if you look at the assistants he hired, that staff could be in the ACC. I mean,
Rockefort was.
Yeah, I know.
Rockefort was in Virginia Tech, so of course.
Yeah, exactly. And we hired him away. That ain't the guy that got fired at Virginia Tech. He left to come here. You got the top assistant from UConn on their previous staff, on our staff. I mean,
Rafael Chilius.
Yes, you know I'm terrible with name guess. So we, our staff in basketball right now is really dwarfs our staff in football, to be honest with you. Which is insane at East Carolina. The fact, and granted, it's a lot smaller staff you have to put together, but our basketball staff is on par with the rest of the American. Yeah, I don't think you can say the same about football.
No, and you know that's the one thing I want to mention. And Brandon, I know you being a football player, football is the sport that's always here that we're that's the number one sport in East Carolina. Look at the volleyball team right now; they're smoking hot. Look at the men's.
Mm-hmm. Wait a minute, David. You might want to change your wording there.
I didn't mean. I wasn't.
Look at the volleyball team.
I was talking about
this.
I was talking
this
about
this. This is the family program, man.
But anyway, the volleyball team is doing very well. You look at the women's soccer team, first-year coach Jason Hamilton doing very well. The men's swimming team, the 21st in the nation. The women's team is, and theirs is 37th in the nation. Even the Olympic branded, the Olympic sports are doing very well. So you know what sport it comes down to right now?
Football.
We've got to get the football team.
Absolutely.
We got to get.
And you left out, David. You left out nothing mighty, East Carolina baseball.
Yep.
No, I mean, I'm talking about. I know. I'm talking about the sports right now.
Okay, fall sports. I got you.
Yeah, fall sports. But yeah, of course. I mean, Cliff Godwin. There. You know, there's. It's not a question of if we're going to go to Omaha. It's when. And I think you see him in the next year or two. We'll be there. Yeah. And it's Omaha. I'm going to have to celebrate my anniversary with my wife in Omaha.
That's okay. Omaha's a great city. You know, you can get her delicious steaks. Omaha's known for their steaks. You know, it's a nice town. They make the College World Series a big event. They do a fair during the College World Series. I mean, so it's a big time event. She'll enjoy it. Just send her out to the shopping mall when you go to the games. When we go to
she definitely could do that.
Yeah,
I'll be very broke by the time I come back to the Greenville area of Williamson. Brandon, I wanted to ask you with before we let you go, and I know we could talk to hours for you. We're trying to be respectful of your time. What do you think, because you're a former player, we think a lot of you. You've been tremendous to us on this podcast and the program. You're giving back now by being a high school football coach. You've seen it. You've been there. You've done that. You're conference champion. I mean, what do we have to do to get back to the level of where we were with you guys?
So to be fair, you know, the guys on my team, hey, throughout my 3 years there, we had some phenomenal players. Newly inducted Hall of Famer Chris Johnson, All-Pro Linville Joseph. NFL CJ Wilson. I mean, the list goes on and on, but it all begins with the basics. And what we did as a group was work our tails off. We all bought into what the coaches were selling, and we played for one another. You know, we had leaders. You know, we had leaders from the James Pickney to the Patrick Pickney. At times, Rob Cash, you name it, the list goes on and on at quarterback, you know. But we played for one another. You know, we got it done when our numbers were called. We were, as an offense, we were ranked number one in the conference in the red zone. We scored points. At times, our offense will go backwards, but we hardly ever turned the ball over. We played championship defense. And when it was time for us to throw the football, we connected, you know.
Hey, Brandon.
So,
I got a question for you. How influential, and maybe not at all, but how influential was Steve Shankweiler and Junior Smith being Pirates, and Shank didn't go here, but he's a Pirate. Did they hold y'all to a standard to what they believe East Carolina should be, those two coaches in particular?
They, They did. And I vividly remember Coach Schenkweiler taking it a step further. I mean, he will obviously be in full out coach mode, but he will also have that sidebar conversation. Hey, you're not only playing for your brother, you're playing for Eastern North Carolina, which is part of the reason why our roster, in case you guys haven't noticed, our roster had a whole lot of North Carolina talent on it, because Skip Holt's philosophy was simple and plain. The local kids play the hardest, you know.
Yep.
So we play for the pride of the university, and we do realize that we didn't always win as many games as we wanted to win, but at the same time, every time we took the field, we played with the soul that, hey, Eastern North Carolina has, which is the blue-collar mentality. You know, no nonsense. Do your job, make no excuses. And that's all we did.
Let me ask you this, guys. I'm going to throw this. I saw this morning, so I want to throw this question out. And I haven't talked to anybody, so people on the podcast, I think that we maybe sometimes it's obvious that we don't always go over stuff. But how would you guys feel, and I want to get your feelings on this. I'm going to start with Brandon. I'm going to put you on the spot. Would you hire, if they make a coaching change, do you bring Skip Holtz back to East Carolina?
Me personally, I'm okay with it. And here's why I say that I'm okay with it. Because I know that, and granted, he left, okay, and we all get it. But at the same time, I believe in hiring people who want to be here. You understand? And he has a whole lot of connections within the coaching realm. For example, his coaching staff when I was there, look at the experience. You kidding me? He had veteran position coaches, which made a difference, you know? So I'm okay with it.
What about you guys?
I would. If Skip wanted to come back, now he's got an interesting deal in his contract with Louisiana Tech. Anytime he wins 8 games, his contract automatically gets another year extension, which is very interesting.
I didn't know that. Wow.
Yep. Which is an interesting caveat to his contract. So if he gets 8 wins this year, that's another year added on it. So the buyout may be difficult. Skip's a hell of a coach. He would not be my first choice. I'm a move forward kind of guy. To me, even bringing back, you know, even with Billy, I just think Skip would not be my first choice, and it's nothing to do with him. It's just because I'd like to have somebody new in here that hasn't been here before. But would I bring him back if he wanted the job? He was the best. Let me put it to you like this. Would I take him over Scotty Montgomery? Hell to the yeah. I would gladly take Skip Holtz over Scotty Montgomery. He's a great coach. He can put together a great staff because of his contacts. He's got a lot of I've had conversations with you guys about Shane Beamer. Being down at Oklahoma with Lincoln Riley and Ruffin right now, and you know, coming from that same kind of pedigree with Frank Beamer, like Skip did with Lou, you know, that's why Shane Beamer intrigues me so much. And now it's just lo and behold, down there with Lincoln and Ruff. So you know, that kind of same thought process that what Skip could do with put together a staff goes into my mind with Shane Beamer. But would I bring Skip back if he wanted the job? He certainly
was
getting an interview.
Yeah. Hey, Bubba, what do you think?
I would say, like Kyle said, I mean, that's what if depending on the rest of the candidate pool, I'll be okay with bringing Skip back. I don't think it's going to happen, but I'll be okay with it if it did. But another guy that we've talked a lot about on this podcast, guys, like back during our preview, is a guy named Bill Clark. The job he's done at UAB. Now, obviously, he has extremely strong ties to that area because he had been at Jacksonville State prior to UAB, and then I think prior to that he had been a high school coach in the area. So very strong ties to that state and then also to UAB because he stuck with that program when it dropped its program and brought it back. So he's obviously someone who's very, very loyal. But he has them 5-1 now, and has 6-1 North Texas coming to Legion Field next week.
Yeah, Bill Clark's a heck of a football coach. He would be another one at the top of my list. And then you got to look at Mike Houston of a JMU, and then the guy who knocked off Mike Houston and Bubba, maybe you'll know his name. Elon's head coach right now. He's doing a hell of a job with their football program. So he would be another one. And I mean, that's a guy like. I mean, are you kidding me? If Eastern Atlanta offered Elon head coach, he'd come here running. he dragged his house behind him. You know what I mean? And he's a great coach. To go up and beat James Madison on the road, I mean, that's a tall task right there.
Another one, guys, very quickly, because I know we're winding things down, but obviously one of your favorites, Kyle, is the up at Eastern Michigan. We had
Scott Weatherby
on earlier in the show, and, Coach Chris Creighton, he did a tremendous job at lower levels prior to EMU hiring him, and then since he's been at Eastern Michigan, that program's only gotten better. And this year they upset Purdue, and then since then they had lost some close ball games against
every game's close
quality nice teams like Buffalo. But then yesterday they got a huge win over Toledo.
Let me tell you something. That is the toughest job in America to recruit to. Eastern Michigan, they're literally in the shadows of the Big House in Michigan. That's why they can't build a program. Chris Creighton, just straight up X's and O's, it may be one of the best coaches in the game. And if anybody listening right now, just Google Chris Creighton and watch him talk on YouTube. He's not a PJ Fleck motivator, row your boat kind of nonsense. He is the kind of guy that doesn't want you to buy into him. He wants you to buy into yourself. And Chris Creighton is just excellent football coach. And he's an excellent man.
All right, guys. Well, we'll have to keep the conversation going. And, folks, you can like us on Facebook. So you can search us there. And, obviously, we want you to follow us on Twitter. It's @TheSportsOBJ. On Instagram, The Sports Objective. And, Brandon, you have been tremendous. We appreciate you. And, hopefully, you won't be a stranger. And we're going to take Kyle and Bubba and some folks to a Hurricanes game.
I think sure.
Definitely in 2019 for sure. And definitely look forward to doing that with you if you want. And certainly love to have you back here on the podcast.
Absolutely. And as usual, I appreciate it. I really do. You guys are awesome. You guys are phenomenal. And I look forward to it.
All right. For Kyle from LaGrange Barber and obviously Bubba Rosenbaum, I'm Dave Richmond for the Sports Objective Podcast.
You've been listening to the Sports Objective Podcast. Join us next time as the guys will be objective, and the objective is sports.